Thanks for listening to the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
What up, Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Hope you're having a spectacular day. The Doug Gottlieb Show broadcast live and direct from sunny Southern California. What's the most valuable thing in your life? Right? What's the most valuable thing you have? Is it your house? Is it your car? Jewelry? What do you value the most? Well, the Green Bay Packers still have their quarterback, right? Which I guess we're supposed to sit here and go like, hey, it was close. They almost didn't have Aaron Rodgers. But the truth is that they had the paper that mattered. Aaron Rodgers was, until yesterday, under contract for 3 more years, counting this year. And today, we believe he's under contract for 2 more years, counting this year. What I did was I reached out to some of my friends, and I was like, why would they acquiesce and void that last year? And a couple buddies of mine texted me back, like, you know, he might have said he was going to retire, and they thought it was a bluff worth at least, you know, they were going to have to redo the contract or figure it out at the end of this year anyway. But this solidifies that in 9 months, they're going to have to figure out what they want to do with Aaron Rodgers. This he's going to play somewhere else. The mistake that people made for a long time is assuming, like, signing early in a scholarship. And the reason you don't do it, the reason you would do it is you lock yourself in, you know you have a scholarship, you know your school. The reason you shouldn't do it is, man, everything changes during one season. I'll never forget, you know, like when I signed to play at Notre Dame, I'd never seen them play. And I simply loved Fran McCaffrey, who was an assistant coach, recruited me. And John McLeod, I was like, well, this is a former NBA head coach, he'll get it. And I watched them play twice, Loyola Marymount and San Diego, back-to-back games out in California. And right then and there, I was like, man, this is a mistake. Just didn't fit me and how I like to play. Now, we found a way to make it work, but so much changes in sports in a year. Guys get hurt. Guys get better. Guys get worse. Coaches get fired. Coaches get hired. Things just change. And so all Green Bay did was said, like, look, we have a timeline when we want to make a decision on this. It's not now, it's next offseason. So they bought something. You know what they bought? They bought time. They bought time. They bought time for themselves to take a breath. Let's take a look. All right, Aaron Rodgers had one season in which 2 years ago, they thought he was a depreciating value. Last year, he exceeded anybody's reasonable expectations. What about this year? This year, there'll be fans in the stands. This year, they feel like they figured out their offensive line. This year, they re-signed his favorite running back. They're trading for his favorite wide receiver. This should be the year. And if at the end of the year, he still isn't down, well, like, we're going to trade him. But we bought ourselves 9 months to figure out, because if we have to trade him now, we're not going to get the proper draft picks in return. The draft picks we will get would get worse for us, for the Packers, because Aaron Rodgers makes you so much better. Right? So, isn't there a movie like that? I would ask Beyer, but not, you know, he's not. Isn't there a movie called something about time? You ever seen that, Ramos?
Somewhere in Time?
Is it Somewhere in Time?
With Christopher Reeve.
What's that one about?
He goes back in time to like the 1800s or something like that, or 1700s. Was that not it? Is that correlation to, oh, Dan's checking in. What do you got, Dan?
Was filmed on Mackinac Island. I believe, yeah.
Somewhere in time?
Yes, I believe that's what it was.
Is that the one where a guy has like 24 hours and... tell me what Somewhere in Time is about.
I just knew that it was filmed on Mackinac Island because I visited there.
Okay, Somewhere in Time is, let's see here.
Wikipedia says, or something says, in 1972, a playwright becomes fascinated by a photo of Elise McKenna, who Jane Seymour plays her, a turn-of-the-century stage actress while staying at the Grand Hotel in Mackinac Island, Michigan. And then he learns from a friend that time travel may actually be possible through hypnosis. And then he travels in time, and the two appear destined to be together. I don't want to ruin the ending, but...
Time travel did it for me.
Apparently, Elise's jealous manager attempts to keep them apart.
There's In Time, which is a 2011 movie. Justin Timberlake was in it. Instead of using, this is the one I think, instead of using banknotes, the new economic system uses as currency, each person has a clock on their arm that counts down how long they have to live. In Time.
In Time. In Time. Okay. Not Somewhere in Time, but just...
Well, I'm watching Somewhere in Time tonight.
21,
sure.
In the year 2169, people are genetically engineered to stop aging on their 25th birthday. When the one-year countdown on their forearm begins, when it reaches zero, a person times out and dies instantly. Right? Time has thus become the universal currency. Transferred directly between people and stored in time capsules. Several major areas called time zones. Dayton is the worst time zone, by the way. I can attest to that, Midwest. Just kidding. Anyway, In Time. Like, that's basically what it is. We all have a certain finite amount of time. Teams have it. And you don't want to be rushed. The Green Bay Packers said, hey, let's just take a breath and next year we can figure out what's what. I guess the question becomes, this is not happening in a bubble, right? Other teams had a more traditional offseason, whereas the Packers did not. And there is a certain, like, idea it could become a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know? A self-fulfilling prophecy. If you have a disappointing year when you weren't with the team the entire offseason. So I think that's going to be fascinating to watch. If you're just joining us, the story of the day appears to be this Simone Biles thing. Okay? So Simone Biles is a great gymnast. She's called the GOAT, the greatest of all time. On her leotard, she has an outline picture of a goat. Okay, so here's the question. And what we'll do is, I think I might take a couple calls. I may live to regret it, but may take a couple calls. Simone Biles is a superstar athlete. She pulled out of the team competition last night because she wasn't feeling it. It's described as a mental health episode. She's obviously been through a lot if you know anything about U.S. gymnastics. My point is, why are women gymnasts the only ones we treat this way? With the kid gloves of, oh, you're not feeling it? Don't worry about it. Take the night off. Can you imagine if Tom Brady was down 28-3 to the Atlanta Falcons? He's like, yeah, guys, I just don't have it tonight. Just not feeling it. My mental health isn't right. And please don't say I'm not sympathetic towards people's mental health. I am. If Simone Biles was having a, had a long-term mental health crisis, which required immediate attention and was anywhere in the realm of maybe she could be suicidal. This is very serious stuff. She wouldn't be talking about competing later on this week. I have no doubt that she has demons and she has things that she works through. That's sports. That's what makes the best is that they can have all these things go on in their life and still find a way somehow. How did he do that? How did she do that? How did they overcome all this thing? How did Carrie Strug land on one leg? I'm sure we'll get the you're unfail male chauvinist pig thing. I'm actually the opposite of that. That's the truth to it, right? If I say we should treat Simone Biles just like we should treat LeBron James, just like we should treat Tom Brady. If I said these things, that's the opposite of being a male chauvinist pig. That's actually being equal and fair and righteous. Why do we do the opposite? We'll discuss next.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. All right, let's take some stances here before we take some calls. We'll get to some calls in a second. Let me start with you, Buyer, because we haven't discussed this in over an hour. So my position is this. I'm sympathetic to Simone Biles and to all the things she's dealing with. And she wasn't feeling right, when she went on her first vault attempt. So she goes and she pulls her coach aside, talks to the doctor, and pulls herself out of the competition, which I do on many levels think, like, that's actually a pretty brave thing to do. And she cheered for her teammates. She didn't sit over there and sulk. She didn't go into the locker room. She didn't make it about herself. Like, these are all... My issue, though, is that how come we don't treat male athletes the same? Like, we don't. Like, you know, LeBron James and what happened in against Dallas. Like, he choked. Flat out, period, stop. And I do believe that while what she did was a sign of a good teammate... She wears a leotard that has a goat on the back of it because she's the greatest of all time. Like, the greats of all time, they find ways to process these things and overcome them. And I get accused of all things of male chauvinism. Like, that's not true. If I'm trying to treat you as an equal to a man, that's the opposite of it. So I'm trying to equate some people believe LeBron's the greatest of all time. Some people think Tom Brady's the greatest of all time. Just imagine if Tom Brady, when they're down 28-3 to the Atlanta Falcons, and he's not playing well. He played terribly the first two and almost three quarters of the third quarter, right? It was the fourth quarter where he was incredible. But imagine if he was like, I'm just not in the right headspace. You guys, you're better off without me. We would crush him. Am I looking at this the wrong way, Buyer?
I do think that the women's gymnastics team and what has gone on with that organization, and Biles has talked about it herself, plays a big role in it as well.
The Larry Nassar stuff?
Yes, yes. And representing an organization, you know, that has failed them and has violated so many of them, I think that plays a role in this. And she has said as much during her time that it has been difficult to balance that aspect of it, of going for her goals and then also representing what that organization.
The Larry Nassar stuff is gross, disgusting, and it's the worst part, you know, some of the worst parts of humanity. I know she had to testify. I guess it never really escapes you, but she had Olympic games since then, right? Like he retired in 2015. He didn't go to the 16 Olympics.
I could never understand
what a young woman or a young man who's been sexually abused, what that is like to deal with. And I'm not going to pretend to be insensitive to it because I'm one, a human being, and two, I have children of my own. I understand that. That's one of those, like, my mom has cancer things where, like, I can't really go anywhere with it, right? But I don't know if that's, is that what this is about? Because she's talking about the pressure. Like, she's under a substantial amount of pressure to perform because this is like their last Olympic Games, right? And she's expected to win all the time because she wins all the time. And when she's not, like, if you wearing a goat leotard doesn't exactly quiet the expectations, right? Like, I don't know. I can be respectful completely in understanding the Larry Nassar stuff. If that's what she's dealing with, I don't really know where to go with it. It's awful. But again, based upon her own words, this is about, she's been dealing with a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
And I get it. Like, but that's what makes the best the best. That's why we put our kids in sport. That's why I put my kids in sport. That's why I have my son pitch when he was not ready to pitch at all. And what I would tell him, which is like, look, if you can process the emotions of pitching, if you can find a way to throw strikes, if you can understand time, score, situation, when the ball is hit to you, you can field the ball and then remember, where am I? What am I supposed to do with it? Where does the ball go? Like, these are all great life lessons for overcoming stuff. And I just, like, do I think that obviously you need to be in prime mental health to win the Olympics? Yes. But having a bad vault and being a little disoriented, I don't know. You generally think of the best of the best as figuring out a way to get it all together. Let's go to Blake in Arkansas. Blake, you're on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Hey, thanks, Doug. This morning I was right there with you thinking, I cannot believe she quit. Who quits? You're supposed to be the greatest of all time. And then the more I thought about it, is it because if you screw up in something like that, I mean, you could land on your head and break your neck and be paralyzed. Is it the aspect of being dangerous? And don't get me wrong.
She said as much. She said, you know, I could get hurt. But again, this is part of it. Like, have you ever seen a balance beam? I know a lot about gymnastics only because my sister was a gymnast, and then, you know, she grew to like 5'3", like, you're going to be too tall. She never grew again. And we have a family friend who's actually moving again. I think they're moving to Shawnee Mission in Kansas. And she's very, very talented 12-year-old gymnast. And she has like a balance beam like in her room. So, like, look, the idea of doing a back handspring or a somersault or a flip off of any of this stuff. Yes, of course, that can be a logical reason why you're like, hey, I'm not right now, I want to land on my neck. But remember, this is the most decorated gymnast of our lifetime. So I do wonder if, like, the injury thing, you have to, part of being a great athlete is you have to find a way to take that fear out of your brain. And maybe that's the demon that she's talking about, is this fear of being injured, of landing on her head or ending her career, and et cetera. I don't know. Sandy in Texas. You're on the Doug Gottlieb Show. Go ahead, Sandy.
Hi. Well, thank you for taking my call. I really enjoy your show. I'd like to say that, you know, she's a young lady under a great deal of pressure. I get it. She has access to probably great therapists, how to clear your mind, how to, you know, battle this. Walking off the biggest stage in the world, I'm sorry. That's not what the greatest of all time does. And I do feel sorry for her, because I think this is going to follow her the rest of her life. And it saddens me as a woman, because I do respect her. I respect everything about her. But I think this was the wrong decision. And you're right. You know, I think of the young men who walked onto the beach at Normandy. They knew they were probably going to get killed. That's PTSD right there. My father-in-law was a ranger, one of the first to climb that wall. So I get it. I know what PTSD is. I'm a nurse in mental health, and I wish her all the luck, but this was not a great decision.
Yeah, I don't know. I appreciate the call, Sandy. You know, like, look, there's part of me that says she was actually being a good teammate, saying like, hey, I ain't got it. You guys got it. You got no chance with me. There's part of me that says, yeah, the best of the best figure out a way to make it work, right? And they just overcome it. And they sit there and then they do an interview afterwards, like, you know, look, I thought about tapping out after that first fall, but then, you know, I caught my breath. I talked to my coach. I talked to my teammates, and I just did it. And right, that's, I guess maybe it's have we all been taught this is there's no difference in this topic, by the way, than in what I said about Andrew Luck, right? Oh, everybody, you're the worst with the Andrew Luck and the millennial and coming back from injury. Like, no, like what I'm used to in sports is Alex Smith is you're going to lose your leg. No, I'm not going to lose my leg. All right. You'll never walk again. I'm going to walk again. You'll never run again. I'm going to run again. No chance you ever play football. Okay. I'm a starting quarterback for the Washington football team. Right. Tell me something I can't do and I'm going to show you. That's what the best people do. And I think one of the things that Sandy's getting at is, look, they're like you're fighting this battle. This is my issue. You're fighting this battle of, hey, we're female athletes. We want to be treated the same as the men. That's all we ask for. Don't treat me as anything different. Just treat me just like you treat the guys. Okay, really? Because my point is, if a guy did the exact same thing, we'd be like, we made fun of Kyrie Irving. Now, some of the Kyrie stuff was, it just dragged on forever. Some of it was he didn't tell his coach. He just, hey, I ain't going to be there today. You guys figure it out. But, I mean, Kyrie Irving simply saging Boston Garden because he had a bad experience there trying to rid the evil spirits. And I'd say 70% of the sports world clowned him. I explain to me why there's this protected class. You can't have it both ways, right? Can't have it both ways. If you want to be judged and valued in the same realm as the greats of all time, that's where we run into conflict. I bring up Paul George. And if you go back and listen, I was the guy telling you last year that Paul George going through mental health issues when he's in the bubble was a real thing. People were like, Paul George is soft. Paul George is a choker. Paul George is like, Do we have the same feeling about Simone Biles today? And if not, why are we? Because she's a diminutive woman. She's the most talented and successful gymnast of our lifetime. Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Let's continue this discussion. Rich Ortenberger is going to join us in a moment. Of course, he played for the Patriots. I think my interest in the Packers now is, did any of this, not necessarily distraction, but any of this hurt their ability to advance in the offseason? If Aaron Rodgers was really mentally checked out, right, on the Packers, does it hurt where they are right now and where they can get to in the season? Byer, I got to ask you a question here. I was looking.
Yes.
Likelihood this is Rodgers' last season in Green Bay is what percentage? What do you think?
I think it's better than 50%.
Okay. I would agree with you. So, if it's better than 50% and you've never been to a game at Lambeau Field, like I haven't, and you think Aaron Rodgers is, if not the greatest quarterback of all time, in the discussion, it stands to reason you should go to a game, right?
Sure. Absolutely.
Okay. Here are the home games. I have a couple earmarked in my brain that that I should consider. Ready?
Okay.
Lions, September 20th. Steelers, October 3rd. Washington football team, October 24th. Seahawks, 14th of November. Rams, 28th of November. Bears, 12th of December. So that's after the bye week. Browns, Christmas Day. Vikings, January 2nd. Rank them.
They're all good. I mean,
give me your top three. They're not all good. I don't think they're all good.
They are.
The Vikings will be the last one, so that'll be an emotional one. But it's in January in Lambeau. Gonna pass. The first one is the Lions, which does not feel like a competitive game. And September feels like it'd be beautiful in Lambeau. Probably going to pass that, too, because that's just too nice. And too early on, right? They got Saints first game, then Lions. That's 2-0, baby. Steelers, Washington. You got Seahawks. That's your squad. That's probably your number one pick. Rams, Bears, best rivalry, longest rivalry in the sport. Browns, legit Super Bowl contender. Or Vikings.
Let me just say this. As someone who's been to a game at Lambeau, grew up going to a game a year, it doesn't matter what season. I mean, yeah, you don't want to be there in the cold, but a nice warm afternoon in September is great, just as is the fall, the brisk fall afternoon in October and November. I would say, though, of those picks, yeah, the Seattle and the Rams game is one that is a little unique, but you have two of the top teams in the NFC to choose from. Yeah, Pittsburgh's nice because Pittsburgh doesn't come to Lambeau all the time. And, yeah, you know, once every 8 years, that could be odd. But I think for really of what is at stake would be the Rams and the Seahawks game, I think, would probably be your best bets.
Huh, that's a great point. I was thinking Steelers, only in that it's Ben's last trip there no matter what. Right?
Sure.
So you have Ben, you have, they don't normally go there. And I also think of, like, early October sounds glorious.
Yes.
Sounds glorious. Where mid to late November sounds like Lambeau. Could be nice, could be overcast,
yeah,
could and gray.
Snow. Yeah.
Could be snow.
In January, snow. You know you'll have snow.
Well, Ramos, what do you think, bud? You're going Rams first?
Most definitely, and I do agree with you. I was thinking about the months when you were saying it. Like, definitely don't want to go in December and January. I wouldn't. For the coldness and stuff. But I did think Steelers, definitely Seahawks, and the Rams. Yeah.
What are you going to say there?
I was going to say, if you want a tailgate as well, that's got to come into the conversation. It's one thing to just show up to the game, but honestly, if you want a tailgate, that is going to play a part in your decision as well, where you may want nicer weather to sit out there before the game and you know, grill some brats and dogs, have some beers, whatever you want to do. I think
so Seattle would be your number one, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, I think it'd be a
Bears two, Rams two, Seahawks or Steelers two.
I'm telling you, honestly, it's a treat whenever you go. Like truly it is. And I'm not trying to sit on the fence here of
no,
decisions,
okay,
but they all have like there's no better field when it's in perfect condition in the NFL than Lambeau Field. So when you go in September and the sun is shining and the grass is green and everything is crisp and the sun is shining, awesome. You go when the leaves start to turn and it's a little cool and there's a chill in the air, even better. You go when the tundra is frozen in December and January and everybody's in their snowsuit and their blaze orange, awesome to go. You got a great story to tell that you were there at a game in Lambeau in December and January. It's truly like there's really no bad place to go. Day game versus night game. There's the anticipation of Monday night football or Sunday night football at Lambeau, but a noon kickoff Central Time. You know what's more Midwest than that? So it's really there really are not any bad options. Even the season home opener against the Lions.
Look, the problem with the noon kickoff. Problem with the noon kickoff is you start drinking at like 10, like you are so sleepy by like the second quarter. Like, oh, so you got to bring a flask in. I continue to keep that blood alcohol content at a certain level. And then when the game's over, like, you are really gassed. But you could get out from Chicago that night if you wanted.
Sure.
Or get out from Milwaukee that night pretty easily. It's a possibility.
Huh. Yeah. I really don't think that there's a bad option. I really don't.
Do we think this is Tom Brady's last year?
No, I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No. Unless they win it all, maybe then he'll say, you know, what are the odds of leaving going back to back? But I think that if they don't win it, I think that will try to persuade him to go back next year. I think he's got two left.
That's the problem, though, with the going back for another year is you're never, totally satisfied. You want to go back and you're always trying. Very few times you get to pick that you go out on top. And Brady seems to be the exception, right? Where he won it again last year. But it does feel like at some point in time, he'll want to leave and it won't link up with him winning. I guess he's won enough now, it doesn't matter. But so oftentimes guys try and come back for that one more year and it works out to be a disaster. A lot like Brett Favre, right? Favre was close, then came back for that one extra year with Minnesota and literally the dome collapsed. That's how bad a year it was. The dome collapsed. Coming up next, we'll get to what the Fox said, including Colin had something interesting to say on Aaron Rodgers having more suitors for his talents than Tom Brady did. What does it mean? Find out next.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Hey, it's me, Rob Parker. Check out my weekly MLB podcast, Inside the Parker, for 22 minutes of piping hot baseball talk featuring the biggest names and newsmakers in the sport. Whether you believe in analytics or the eye test, we've got all the bases covered. New episodes drop every Thursday, so do yourself a favor and listen to Inside the Parker with Rob Parker on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcast. Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Every day at this time, we like to get you a portion of a previous show on Fox Sports Radio or Fox Sports One. We call it...
What does the Fox say?
This was Colin Cowherd earlier today.
Everybody feels like they can win. Aaron's got a little more leverage. The Packers feel like, okay... All right, no chaos. We're still in the Super Bowl window. They will have an easier transition than it would have been if Aaron retired this morning. And Aaron Rodgers has one great benefit. Carson Wentz to a new team. Sam Darnold to a new team. Matt Stafford to a new team. Off of Tom Brady's success to a new team, if those three can add juice to the Panthers or the Colts or the Rams, and then Aaron Rodgers says, I'm available. He will have far more suitors than Tom Brady did at his age. He's going to be 38 after this season. If Aaron can remain injury-free, light it up, be his typical great self, doesn't have to be an MVP, can be very strong. And if Wentz and Darnold and Brady now and Stafford have all added juice to their football teams, Aaron's going to have multiple teams. It will largely be his choice because he won't play for, you know, a tire fire, and the team knows that.
I think there's a couple of things to it. One, we're talking about the options that Aaron Rodgers will have next year in the offseason. Do you know how many things are going to change between this time this year? And I remember, like, the perfect example is San Francisco. You go back before the draft, would they have loved adding Aaron Rodgers? Of course. But now they have Trey Lance. They have so much invested in Trey Lance in terms of draft picks, draft capital, and cost. They're going to have to get rid of Garoppolo. Garoppolo is going to go somewhere and likely be a starter. We don't know what happens with New England, but the fact is that, one, you're going to have new quarterbacks come in, and they're cheap. You're going to have some of these older quarterbacks be on the market, and Aaron Rodgers is tricky. Now, is he more valuable at this age than Brady is? Yeah, because he can move. And Brady, you felt like he was starting to get over the hill, and he can't really move, so you really got to protect him. Really got. And no one knew how long he wanted to play, and I don't think anybody truly knows how long Aaron Rodgers wants to play either, if we're just being honest. So I think the whole thing is fascinating. But this idea that he'll have more suitors, we don't know. And Tom Brady, as much as we all thought it was the Dolphins, Tampa, and the Chargers, there was obviously a talk with the Niners, there was the Bears, there was the Titans, there was the Raiders. That's a lot of teams. That's what the Fox said.
What does the Fox say?
Does anybody know how to play rugby?
You know, I was watching it the other day with Lucas, Doug, and he was asking all these questions. Like, I don't know. That's what I was saying. He goes, well, Dad, why are they tackling and throwing the ball? I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's all I kept saying. I was honest. Like, I didn't try to lie. It's like, yeah, you know. I'm like, I have no idea, son.
None. Literally have no idea. I had the same thing. I was talking with a bunch of friends, and we're all group chatting on a text. And they're like, are you guys watching this? Like, yeah. What exactly is happening in front of us? I was like, I have zero idea.
The great thing is when you think you've understood something, and you're like, oh, and then 3 minutes later, they violate that rule and it's allowed. And then you realize, all right, I'm back where I started.
I just, like, how many times can they be tackled? When do you lose? Sometimes I've seen people lose the ball and it's not explainable. And then what is the deal with the throw-in thing where you lift a guy up?
And then sometimes it's fake, too. Like, it's a fake. Like, he'll lift him up and then he'll just throw it to somebody else.
Psych.
Yeah, psych.
There was a point where the USA punted and then got the ball where it landed. Yes. Like, I thought they were punting back to
Nobody was explaining. You have to listen. Here's the thing. Yes. I don't know who the color analyst was, but you have to understand your. This is one of the big things is you got to understand your audience. Okay, this is when I do games. Okay, and I had a friend tell me this that was a great advice. He's a very talented producer, and he was like, it was my first CBS game. And he's like, you've done ESPN games. CBS game is a little different. I go, how so? He's like, yeah, look, the viewer of a CBS game could be a dad, 50 years old, UCLA alum. He hadn't seen UCLA play all year. And so in many ways, you kind of got to give an instructional manual. Who are these players? Very basic. And if you're going to break down a play, almost over-explain it because you're dealing with a neophyte who you're explaining to is great. And he called it baby bites. Like, it just gives me a baby bite, something they can chew. And don't give them some big thing they gotta chew to eat because they just won't. I kind of think that's how analysts should handle us during the Olympics, right? It's like, I totally get that you know what's going on. We have no idea. And the only sport that resembles the sport being played is American football. And so your brain, it's like, any guys, Ramos, do you speak Spanish?
Not very well.
Okay. And I would guess, Byer, do you speak any foreign language?
I spoke German a while back, but.
Okay. So here's the thing. Do you know how whatever your native language is, that's what you think in, right? So like if somebody says something, even once you become semi-fluent in language, somebody asks you a question and you have to think in English and then translate it and then, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas when it's in your native language, that's what you think in. There's no thinking really involved in it. That's basically how we watch rugby. Even if we know the rules, our brain automatically reverts back to American football rules. And so when you said you punted, I was like, I know exactly what you're talking about. And I have no idea what happened. And nobody told me.
Yeah.
Okay, listen, American blokes who don't understand anything about rugby, what he just executed was called a punt, much like your American punt. The only difference is you can recover it and then you get the ball back. Why? I don't know. It's just what the rules have always been. Like, okay, do you have to give the guy a yard? Can he fair catch? What's a fair catch? Like, all of these things are spinning in my head. I'm like, I like what I'm watching. I just wish somebody would sit there next to me and go like, okay, here's what's going on here. Which is, I thought, what the job of the guys on TV was.
First time I saw it, Doug, I'm like, all right, they tackled them. USA's ball. I mean, yes. For an example.
No, and nope, then they pop it out and they keep going.
Yes.
They pop it out and they keep going. But then somehow we got it back, and then we scored, and then we took the ball from them, and nobody explained anything to me.
One time a guy scored, and then he kicked it like right in front of the goalpost. And I went, oh, okay. And then they scored again. And then he kicked it like 90 feet the other way. I'm like, why is he kicking it way over there?
Nobody has any idea.
I have no clue.
And the people that know don't seem to want to share it. Listen, rugby, you're like team handball. We want to love you. I saw the line in team handball. I thought that was the 3-point line. Anybody else think that? You're like, oh, it's grab your 3-point line. I'm okay saying, look, I'm the completely dumb American. I don't know. But you know what? It's made even worse if I'm left to my imagination and nobody tells me. You can't tell me they can't superimpose, like, remember pop-up video?
Yes.
Why can't they do pop-up video with like some like instructions as to why and what's happening
sure.
and what I should actually look
That's
for.
A very good idea. Very good idea.
This is what it's like when my daughter first started riding horses. They get annoyed with me. And I was like, okay, I don't even understand why you're being scored on. Well, it's about your control. And turns out it's like how many strides you take in between jumps and then how you look in your jumps. And like, but they don't do that with the Olympics. We're just supposed to know. We don't know. I never see that's the most rugby. And I liked it. And I think we won. But it looks like an extended, it looks like they're constantly running the triple option. There are no RPOs though, right? There's either run and pitch. Those are the only threats. Simone Biles, right to do or wrong to do what she did? We'll discuss next in the Doug Gottlieb Show.